Thank you.
Thank you. All right, I'm still back here and I'm still an addict. Okay, so we have a couple of speakers today for this workshop, and I've asked Miss Ashley to come and introduce our first speaker.
Ashley.
Woo! Hey, family. My name's Ashley. I'm an addict.
Ashley!
I have the honor of introducing our speaker for this morning. And I don't know about y'all, but when I came in to Narcotics Anonymous, I didn't have a lot of relationships with women. I didn't like to see the mirror of what I attracted, and I didn't trust other women. And through Narcotics Anonymous and learning to love my reflection in the mirror today, I get to build relationships with phenomenal women. And we met at a convention in Loveland, Colorado, a couple of years ago. Did not know each other. Hell yeah, I see you back there. We did not know each other. When we met, she embraced me with the biggest smile and hug. And I was going to have to get a hotel room down the road because the room block was booked. And she said, no, you can stay with me. And when God brings those relationships where, like, your spirits are connected before you even know that it was already divinely set up. Yeah. And because of this topic, what is it again? Yes. Staying, I knew that, but like I didn't know how to, like, the exact one. Anyway, staying clean no matter what, right? Like, for women, for me, only a woman can teach me how to be a woman, right? And so, trust me, I tried a lot of dick, and it didn't work. And so, what you bring and have brought into my life is so deep and spiritual that there are no words. And the way you show up for Narcotics Anonymous and for yourself and for other women is phenomenal. So without further ado, I give you my best friend from San Antonio, Texas.
Who do I look at for time?
Me.
Okay. Maybe I should have not. Okay, I think that's good.
Yeah, that's
can y'all hear me? Can y'all hear me?
Yeah.
Yeah? Okay. Hello, everybody. I'm an addict named Jennifer. When I came in, there was only a few people, so I was like, okay, I'm good, right? And now there's like a whole room full. So first, thank you, God, for Narcotics Anonymous. And thank you, Narcotics Anonymous, for this new way of life. I'm going to read where the topic comes from because it'll be probably the only time I mention it. Because I don't know what I'm going to share. First, step one in Narcotics Anonymous, staying clean has to come first. We realize that we cannot use drugs and live. When we admit our powerlessness and our inability to manage our own lives, we open the door to recovery. Should have just left alone. All right. I have a difficult time with this type of service because it's a big responsibility, but I feel like any type of service commitment is a responsibility in how we carry the message. So this is my first time to Alabama, so yes. And so that was something that I told Ash I wanted to do this year, was make different conventions in different states that I haven't done, because I'm from Texas, and so we have so many freaking conventions there, and it's like I go a lot local, but I have traveled. I just, that's something I want to do this year. And she said, well, I'm going to Alabama, and I was like, all right, let's go. If you're new, welcome. Welcome to this life-saving, life-changing program.
Hell yeah.
Where, like, my life continues to grow and change. And a lot of times it's not for me. A lot of times it's for the people around me, the people I come in contact with, who have no idea that I'm an addict and what I'm capable of. Listen, the job I work at, I'm the only addict there. Or should I say addict in recovery? Because I don't know, they might got some issues, but. And so, to have a program in order to get through life, man. Like, I'm extremely grateful. I'm extremely grateful for that gift that God gave me of desperation. When at the end of the road, man, I love the name of this convention, Out of the Darkness and Into the Light, and especially the theme of this year, when at the end of the road. But even the speaker last night, he said there's even many end of the roads in recovery. And there's times that it's been darkness in recovery.
Come on, Jen.
Where I felt alone and isolated. Where the character defects that I carried for so long, I felt kept me secure, kept me safe. And when I get to recovery, like, there's no room for that shit. There's no room for God if I hold on to that shit. And so that gift of desperation that I was given that one day when I no longer, and it's the prayer that some of us or most of us say, God help me. I don't want to live like this anymore. And I know that many times that I said, God help me, it was to get me out of a situation, get me out of the cop behind me, get me out of jail. But there is no sincerity of, like, really, God help me. But at the end of that road, that desperation that I felt that morning, because I was so tired of the cycle of selling drugs, getting high, selling drugs, getting high, staying up for weeks. No spirit, no life. And when God answered that prayer, man, the relief I felt when I was behind that cop car. Like, man, thank you, God. And there was, like, no resentment with the person who turned me in. It was just, man, just get me there. Ashley and I was showing Ashley on my mugshots yesterday. Got, like, 10 mugshots. I know that's not really a lot. But it was, I was looking at the dates. I was looking at the dates, and there was two of them that were, like, 2 weeks apart. There was three of them in 1 year, another three in another, like, just 1 year. And I was like, damn, God's been trying to get my attention for a really long time. A really long time. I became that mom that said she was never going to leave her kids to go and party. I won't leave them alone. I am not going to use with them in the next room. That's crazy. The dereliction, the degradation, the justification, all the things that the disease of addiction had me doing for just one more. The other topic this morning was ultimate authority, and I was originally supposed to share on that, but I didn't make it down on time because I'm not an 8 o'clock person, so... But when I was thinking about that topic about ultimate authority, I was thinking that my ultimate authority then was a disease of addiction. How it made all my decisions for me. I was completely powerless. Because when I didn't want to degrade myself or sell myself, I did that very thing. And because I didn't sleep with the gentleman that my friend was doing the escorting thing with, I was like, well, I just did it with her. Like, I was involved in the threesome. Like, girl, you were involved. You were involved. Because, see, the disease of addiction had me thinking when I got here that I was different. That I didn't do all those things because I was still clouded by the drugs, clouded by the disease of addiction. It had me an illusion. There was no room for recovery to come in. There was no room for the ultimate weapon, the recovering addict, to share with me the truth until one day God placed it in my heart and said, remember you did that? This woman was sharing about, I think about prostituting, and there was like, I couldn't relate to some things when y'all were sharing because I was just in so much denial of all the things that had happened. But deep in my heart, I knew that this is where I was supposed to be. I tried the other fellowship. Well, not really. I sat in there, really couldn't connect with them. And that's okay, man. Like, this is where God wanted me from the very beginning. And I don't share this often, but I was lit as hell one day. And I was holding on to some things for this individual who had went to jail. And I've been holding on to her things for a really long time. And I was using. And living in my parents' living room in a one-bedroom apartment with all my shit, all her shit. And so I started going through her things, and I'm like, well, I'm just gonna have to get rid of her stuff because she never came for it. Like, I don't know what to do. I can't just keep all this shit here. And so I'm going through her things, and I'm telling you, when I say I was high. You know, we keep out, we're, you know, doing all the things, and we're lit. And man, I'm going through her books, and there's a Narcotics Anonymous basic text, man.
Come on, God.
And I see the gold emblem in the front is what caught my attention. And listen, I opened that book, and I don't know what I read. But I said, I think I'm going to need this later. Look, I was high. That was a God thing. Because I never heard of Narcotics Anonymous before. Sometime later, in one of my times that I went to Bexar County Jail, power greater than myself, H&I came in. And thank you. If you carry and do service in that manner, thank you so much. Because I don't know that I would have heard about Narcotics Anonymous had it not been for H&I. And what that woman shared, I can't even tell you what that woman shared that day. But I can tell you how I felt. And it's part of our message, and it's that I felt hope. Mm-hmm. Like, I remember that feeling so strongly as if it was yesterday. And so I get to Narcotics Anonymous about 2 years later after H&I at the jail, and I'm just ready to do something different. Like, really ready? Except when y'all said alcohol is a drug, I was like, They sell that shit in the stores, around the corner. How is that a drug? But I got some education. I went back to school and I got, you know, took some classes, and alcohol is a drug. It just got, you know, passed legally, whenever. But I didn't take that class till some time, you know, later. It was when I started working the first step that there was a complete surrender to this program. And so when it says staying clean must come first, that's with or without money, with or without a job, with or without a man, with or without a woman, with or without a house or a place to stay, with or without a car. Like, what are you really going to do, Jen? Are you going to continue to hold on to that faith and that trust and that higher power that you have developed in Narcotics Anonymous? That's loving and caring? Because I'm going to tell you that I came in with this, my old ways of that, trying to just be loved. And so when people share about being in a fetal position, I didn't know what the fuck they were talking about until I was in it. When I was involved with a married man, and over and over and over, and I love how the speaker from last night said it, because that's what I say, is that we continue to make the same, insanity is making the same mistakes over and over, and in knowing the results. I expected someone who was incapable of giving me love, of giving me anything that I thought he could give me. Incapable. And so there have been so many times, because each time that I use, it was over a feeling. Inadequacy, shame, guilt. And so I get clean and it's time to feel all that shit. And so I can either run and go use or stick and go through it. And I have done so much work, man, that even though I've been walking around here this weekend, it's not because I'm stuck up. I'm pretty quiet. But a lot of times, man, like, the wheels are spinning and character defects are showing up. Mm-hmm. And because I don't really know anybody here, like, I just stay quiet and I just move. But this weekend I've been praying really hard, because I don't want to allow those character defects to run my life anymore. What happens is I lose connection with y'all, and I lose connection with God. And so there's a lot of work that is continuing to. I just finished my sixth step last night. Thank yes! God. Man, listen, I was on my fourth step for like 3 years. Been on my sixth step for 3 years. I'm like, what the fuck? But something that my sponsor kept reminding me is that You're living it, babe. That is important. We can write all day, but are you applying it to your life?
Come on.
How are you living? And who do you want to be, Jen? What do you want to be about? Is lying and cheating and stealing, yes, it's easier, but is that how you want to continue to live? Because I'll tell you that there's no room for that. There's no room for God when all that's going on. And I've experienced a loving and caring God that I want so much more of that. And that was my intentions for this year. People talk about resolutions, but mine is intentions. And my intention is to get closer to God. And I know that a piece of it, or a big part of it, is continuing through the step work. Because I'm going to tell you, man, that six step was so fucking brutal. Yeah. Like, that shit was nothing compared to the four step. Like, that was painful, but this was more so painful. Seeing that the defects come out and how I harm others with those, and mostly harm myself. And how it keeps me from living this new way of life. And remember I said that I'm the only addict at work, and shit, when that shit shows up, I'm like, damn, what are they thinking? Man. And so I have these deep conversations with my supervisor, and I explain to her the disease of addiction, and I tell her, like, I'm not really like this. Like, I'm really working on myself, and it's not about explaining to me. It's more so of giving her an understanding that this is not who I want to be, and that I'm working towards, that my thinking isn't like their thinking. I suffer from a disease that is mental, spiritual, and physical. And in order to align with God's will, I have to be consistently working on all three. And so part of my intentions this year was to be intentional with my step work. Not see it as a task, not see it as something I gotta get done. Like, really being intentional. And with my health, if I make a commitment to go to the gym, Jen. Because I get locked and loaded in Netflix and Paramount, HBO Max. Like, I get really locked and loaded, for real, for real. Man, that's a big part of why it took me so long to do this step. It's fucked up. It's really fucked up. And so, the most recent thing that I'm facing today, Clean, is my son's using. And that has been painful. But I also know that I don't have to do this alone. And I truly believe in the power of prayer. And so when my daughter-in-law called me back in January, crying and saying, "Mom, I'm just so tired. I don't know what to do for him anymore. I don't have any more strength." Because see, they continue to keep lies and secrets. And so she carries all the burden. And so it's not the first time that she's experiencing it all, right? Because she's in the home. And so she goes on to tell me about how he left Saturday night, and she woke up at 11:30 and he wasn't there. And of course he's doing all the things that we do when we're using. Lying about where he's at. She's like, "I got your location. You're on the other side of town." He's like, "Well, I told you I gotta go get some stuff." And she's like, and you just leave your family here? That broke my heart. And the other day I was thinking about when I left my kids one night, of the many times. And I get home the next morning, and him, my oldest one that's using, is carrying his baby brother and feeding him. And so I can only imagine the pain and the fear that my son was feeling when I left them alone over 9-10 hours. And it pains me because I know what comes next. Thank you, Lord. I know what comes next. Our ends are always the same. Jails, institutions, and death. And it's coming, man. It's coming. And I am not the ultimate authority. So he got his own. And I just got to step out of the way. And so I'm going to take this moment to ask y'all in the moment of silence if you'll keep my son, Adrian, in mind. And I've asked others to pray, and that is all I can do. Besides invite him to a meeting and provide him with a basic text and giving him men's numbers, like, he's got to do the work. And he's got to become willing, but I've got to get out of the way. So I hope that I was able to touch many spirits and help at least one person today. Thank you for allowing me to share.
Wow, what a powerful message. Thank you. All right, so for our next speaker, we have got Miss Nominee introducing her. Is Nominee in here? There she is. Come on up here, girl.
All right, my name is Nominee and I'm an addict. Ooh, yeah, I'm drunk. Katie. Wow. You know, my higher power has a funny way of working, right? I met this young woman, last fall at another addict's house at a little shindig we had. And when I sat down and I met with her, y'all, I was crying by the end of the conversation. And I'm like, I don't even know you. Why are we crying? Right? But I'm talking about that therapeutic value of one addict helping another, right? Without parallel. And so, like, I'm so, so grateful that I've met this young lady. She carries a powerful message. She has some experience about staying clean no matter what that, like, blew my mind when I was talking to her. So without further ado, I give you Katie from Louisville.
Hi, family. My name is Katie, and I'm an addict. I'm really, really grateful to be here. I just shared at the LACNA convention in Louisville, and it's a crazy thing that happens whenever you stick and stay, and people start believing in you and seeing something new and seeing something in your recovery. I had the option of choosing a topic, and I chose this one not just because it sort of has really been a plan, not just to my journey as a whole, but especially in my life in these past couple years. Thanks to a loving and caring God, I just celebrated 3 years on January 19th. I never had 3 years before. So when I was given the topic, saying clean must come first no matter what, I thought, you know, I got a lot of experience in not doing that. I got a lot of, my clean date is January 19th, 2023, but my first clean date was in 2016. And then I had another one in 2017. And then another one in 2018. You know? And when I came to the program, I thought staying clean meant going to meetings, having a sponsor, showing up, doing service, right? But the reality is that's just part of it. That's how you get clean, and that's how you allow yourself to continue to manage to stay clean. What I didn't realize through this process, that staying clean, putting that first, meant setting boundaries. It meant getting honest with yourself. Because I don't know about y'all, but myself is the one person that I manipulated the most in this process.
Come on, Katie.
When I start to justify my behaviors and my thinking and the things that I do, that's when rationalization starts creeping in. I start rationalizing shitty behavior, the way that I talk to people, the way that I move. I start making excuses to myself for really just acting straight out of pocket.
Right.
And I did that clean. Mm-hmm. I did that clean. I'm going to be the most fucked up person, clean and serene, I'm going to tell you right now. And justify every last goddamn move. Make myself the victim in the process. Don't you know who I am? You see this black key tag? Come on. And what I realized was that once you get clean, staying clean is about dealing with that unmanageability on the inside.
Come on.
It's about finding that honesty, understanding where you're fucked up, understanding how your behavior affects the people around you. And that's hard. For me, my unmanageability every time that I got clean was about jumping into a relationship right away. I call it falling into the dick sand. Because when I find a man, I dive into him like a circus clown dives into one of those little cups and just disappear completely. You know? Because my first time getting clean, I went to detox. And there was this dude. And he was so fine. He was like light skinned. And he had the hair. You know what I'm saying? I was like, daddy. And I wasn't ready to get clean at that time. So when I was like, you know what, fuck this, I'm ready to leave. He's like, oh, baby, I'm leaving too. And at that time, I had a lot of not yets in my life. I hadn't lost my house yet. I hadn't used it that way yet. I hadn't lost my kid yet. And instead of putting my recovery first and staying clean first, I followed that man right out the door and into homelessness. And then I did lose my baby. His daddy came and got him. And I said, you got to keep him. He can't be around me. That was the choice that I made. Being clean was not my priority. And I remember being out there, being homeless, and sitting under a tarp in the rain and thinking to myself, this is what I'm choosing over being with my son. Why can't I get this right? Because I come from a long line of addiction. My mother was an addict. She died in front of us from complications of alcoholism on Mother's Day in 2013. And I said, I'll never do that. I'll never be her. I'll never treat my son, my child, the way that she treated me. But you know what? I was fucking worse because at least I always knew where the hell she was. My family didn't know if I was dead or alive until I washed up into the... prison in 2017. And that dude from detox, you know, he did not hold me down when I was locked up. He didn't put no time on the phone. Up in there indigent as fuck, like I could not believe there. You know, but at least I wasn't in there because I was taking charges for him. You know what I'm saying? I was dealing dope. Like, I wasn't one of them. But so then I got released from prison in 2018. And that was really, really fucking difficult because I was so fucked up when I got locked up that, you know, I didn't have no I left my purse at the snitch's house with all my gear in it. I didn't have no ID. I didn't have nothing. And my family was done. And I knew at that point in my life that I had to do something fucking different. The clean had to come first. And for a long time, what I did was I started focusing on the most important relationship that there is that I didn't even know existed, and that was a relationship with myself. So then I got into a recovery house, and then there was this guy. But he was like really funny, but he lived in one of the houses and I lived in the other, and you know, living in a recovery house is kind of like the closest experience like any of us were going to get to like a college dorm, you know what I mean? And we acted fucking wild. At one point I got a puppy and like snuck it in the house. I still have this dog to this day. Like, the director was like, where the fuck did the dog come from? But what ended up happening though is we kind of became a part of the same recovery family. And so it felt right, you know? We was going to meetings, but we'd sit on opposite sides of the room so that we could focus on our recovery. And we would say things like, we know our relationship is front to front, but our recovery is back to back. And that is all well and good. And if you are in a relationship of recovery, that's absolutely true. But if you don't work on the relationship with yourself, if that isn't part of what's coming clean first, then how the fuck are you going to sit down and figure out who you're going to eat with if you're not even really sure what you bring to the table?
Come on, sis.
I didn't know who I was without using. I didn't know who I was without a man. And I didn't realize that figuring that out and making that a priority was about making clean coming first.
Right.
I had no idea. None. Because that was the uncomfortable part. And I like to escape from what makes me uncomfortable. But if we don't sit in what makes us uncomfortable, there's no possible way that we're going to grow past that. How do you know who you're going to be on the other side of fear? And I definitely learned by walking through some fear that most of the shit that is the worst, it was the worst up here. Because who I became on the other side was something I had never experienced in my life. So me and this man, we grew up in the same recovery family, and it feels right. And we get married. 18 months clean, we get married. I got married to him. 18, and then we celebrated 2 years. And then COVID happened. And I was under the impression that I could control my using. We're just going to smoke. And that's all I'm going to do. But the reality is that I had gotten so caught up in the relationship and I had gotten so caught up in the fellowship that I forgot to get caught up in the recovery.
Yeah.
I was so involved in Kiki and TT and that there was a whole other piece that I didn't even realize that I was missing. And after a while, like, the using progressed. And then in 2022, I lost my job. And we had bought a house in this process and everything. And it went from bad to fucking terrible. Because we met in recovery. We didn't know the using side of each other.
Wow.
I used to say, who are you? Who are you? He's who I was when I married him. But I didn't give myself or himself the enough time to heal and to deal. To be able to manage that, because otherwise I wouldn't have abandoned my recovery. Otherwise I wouldn't have been under the false idea that I could control my using.
Come on.
I don't know about y'all, but I'm a fucking addict for real.
Right.
Give it to me. Social media, shopping, Amazon hates to see me coming. You know what I mean? That shot of dopamine where you're like, ooh, like I would be ordering hygiene on Amazon just to see that package on the front porch. Is that my shampoo? So the relationship got real, real bad and real volatile. And we was using whatever you got. And I got to the point where, like, I'm fucking done. Because nothing fucks up your high more than a head full of recovery. Having that experience of understanding what it's like to live life without the use of drugs. And I want it out. And so we had a plan. I'm going to go, because we had these two dogs, Johnny Cash and June Carter. It's my babies. They're my babies. The marriage ended, but I still got the dogs. We had a plan. I'm going to go into treatment. And then when I come out, you go in. Because someone had to stay with the house, someone had to stay with the dogs, right? Because that wasn't just me. Like, we missed having our fucking shit together. So I go to treatment, and when I come out, his disease had rapidly progressed in those 30 days. Mm-hmm. My house was trashed. And maybe it had always been that trash, and I was just too fucked up to notice. And it was full of dope and full of paraphernalia. At one point, with 30 days clean, I found a bag of dope that big underneath my bathroom sink, and he looked at me and said, don't throw that away. I gotta sell that. 30 days clean. The house was so filthy, I didn't even want to unpack my suitcase. I didn't even want to put the toothbrush on my own fucking sink. And I sat in my bed and I cried that night because I had to sit there and take the personal responsibility that I made the choices to put myself in that position. Yeah. I made the choices to avoid things that I didn't even realize that I had avoided to get to where I was. It took some time, but I knew I had to get him into another, get him somewhere else. Because coming clean had to come first. And that was the thing, too. My life had gotten so fucked up. And I remember sitting in treatment and thinking, if I could just get clean, if I could just stay clean, that I know that I'm going to be able to work through this. So he goes, 3 detoxes, 2 rehabs, 2 hospitals. And I had to make the really tough decision to turn my back. I could either stay loyal to him or I could stay loyal to me. And I was not the one that put myself in that position. I was not the one that put myself in that position to have to make that decision. He did. But I was left with the choice, my husband or my clean time. My husband or my life.
Come on.
And I chose me.
Yeah.
And I will never forget that day having to say no, no, and sticking to it. And at this point, my son had gone back to live with his dad, and for the first time since I could remember, I was alone. Alone in the house that we had bought and became a family in. Alone in the wreckage of our using. My car was wrecked. My house was wrecked. No money, no job. So I did the one thing that I knew to do, and I picked up the phone and I called an addict. And step by step, I started to really indoctrinate myself into this process. Literature says that when we relapse, sometimes it brings along a more rigorous application of the program.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Because I had to sit and be like, I'm 38 years old and fucking rehab again. Come on, bro. I'm done. And so I left that marriage to, I walked away from him so I could walk towards me.
Come on, sis. Come on.
And through the process of being clean, I stayed myself into position. I had to have some humility and some willingness. I had to do whatever it took. And that meant doing the things that made me feel real uncomfortable, like sitting by myself, sitting in myself, sitting with myself, sharing honestly and openly in a meeting about how I was angry with him. But at the same time, I knew that I could love him and still want him to recover and not be involved.
That's right.
I wanted to see him sitting in a meeting because it would have been a lot easier to ignore him there than it was when I saw him walking homeless down the street. Mm-hmm. Knowing I can't save him. Yeah. The best thing that I can do is be an example and remind him that this program works and to keep walking the walk. And then in March of last year,
love you.
I got the call that he had passed away in a hotel room. So next month we'll make 1 year since we lost him to this disease. Because I lost my mother and that dude from detox, we lost him too. And I had to walk through that clean.
Yeah, he did.
There was a speaker jam. I found out he passed on a Friday. There was a speaker jam that next Saturday. And the pain, you know, if you've ever experienced intense grief, the loss and the realization of knowing that somebody is no longer here on this earth, it's a painful feeling.
It swallows you. And that next morning, my phone was blowing the fuck up. And it was N.A.
Yeah.
Come here. Come to this meeting. Let us love you. Let us love you. And what I wanted to do was lay in that bed and cry and be sad. But I knew where I needed to be was at that fucking meeting. And grief-stricken and broken and just feeling so many fucking things, I drug my ass out of that fucking bed and I took myself to that fucking meeting.
Come on.
No bra was had that day. Because learning to love yourself means not really giving a fuck anymore. Right. Like, if you see me in the grocery store, I got my indoor house shoes and my outdoor house shoes, you know. Because what I wanted to do was sit there and feel sorry for myself. What my disease wanted me to do was sit there and wallow in the pain and the emptiness. But I knew that my recovery had to come first.
Right.
Because nothing good was going to come from sitting there, but nothing bad was going to come from me going and stepping out. Right. And I did.
Right.
And I did. And when I went to his funeral and had to see him in his casket, as I stood there looking at his body, I had a fellowship around me, hugging me, walking me through that.
That's right.
Because that's what happens when you prioritize your recovery. That's what happens when you put that first. When that has to come first, no matter what. And through this process of being alone and getting honest and digging deeper than I had before and reaching a point in my recovery that I didn't even know existed, I started to cultivate this feeling within myself that I didn't even know what it was. And that was love. Self-love. I never knew what that really meant. And I never even realized it was something I hadn't felt until I felt it. I started to have respect for myself. I started to find my voice. And all of a sudden, accepting less than what I deserve was no longer acceptable.
Come on.
All of a sudden, working and being there for myself was more of a priority than finding that in someone else. And that's what I was always trying to do. You could treat me however you want, just don't leave me.
Come on.
Just don't leave me.
Come on. Seriously.
And what I realized was that I needed to find that within myself. Because those feelings of like, how do I shut that voice up in my head where I'm feeling bad about where I'm talking shit to myself. Because that's the thing too. I don't even give myself an iota of the respect that I give my friends. And many times I call myself a dumb bitch. And I realize every little thing that I do, being clean, it means changing all of that.
Come on.
It's a change in our ideas and our behaviors. So even when I had moments where I said, God, Katie, you're such a dumb bitch, I'd be like, hold up. And I would literally say out loud, you're not a dumb bitch, you're just forgetful sometimes, and that's okay. And it seemed real silly and real stupid, but it was a direction given to me by my sponsor, and holy fucking shit, it started working. My God. And I started feeling gratitude for the things that I used to take for granted. I started feeling gratitude for the ability to be able to work, because I thought for sure that I wasn't going to be able to keep that house. But look what God did. I believe that I wasn't going to be able to maintain those bills. I believe that I wasn't going to be able to carry on without my husband. But I'm here. I celebrated 3 years, 2 months before the anniversary of his death.
Come on. Woo. Share the hope.
And through this process, I had gotten, a couple months before he died, I had this job. It was a job that became to be unexpected. I have 26 years in the hospitality industry, and I was offered the opportunity to work in a private event space. And before I knew it, I was making $80,000 a year. And as a person that became a single mother at 21 that had addict parents, I didn't know what financial stability felt like.
Yeah.
Y'all, I was getting Botox. I was taking trips. You know.
Yeah.
I was doing all, I mean, money, I had money in savings, but this job got real taxing.
Yeah.
It was 24/7. I was on call 24/7. Because when you're dealing with the mother of the groom and this is her son's rehearsal dinner, she don't give a fuck what time of night it is. Right? And it started interfering in my recovery. I was experiencing burnout all the time. Because as an addict in recovery, I had to prioritize time to pour into myself. Recovering and staying clean is a choice that I make every single day, multiple times a day. And the way that I do it has to change. Especially for me. Because what's normal for one person is lethal for me.
Right.
Even things that are legal and socially acceptable are fucking death for me. I cannot participate. And I have to be mindful of that, and I have to be vigilant of that. And I got to the point where I realized I hadn't been in my home group in a month. And I was experiencing extreme burnout. And all I wanted to do when I got home was just not feel the way I felt. Because I wanted that money. What am I going to do if I give up that money? But then it got to the point where I realized one day that I was having those real early on thoughts, because a relapse happens here first.
Come on. Come on.
And I've relapsed enough times to know, and I was applying myself to my recovery enough to know those early thoughts. And that thought was, I don't want to use, but man, I remember when that felt good.
Mm.
Remember when you could release that that pressure valve just a little bit. And then I realized, I gotta quit this fucking job. I gotta quit this fucking job. Because if I get high as a result of this job, the first thing my boss is gonna think is, fuck, how are we gonna replace her? What are we gonna do? She's gone now, she's high. We gotta replace her. He's gonna give a fuck about the company. And what I was realizing is that I was prioritizing that job, that money, that title. Because I was in charge. People saw something in me and that felt good. But the minute that I decided to quit that job, I realized that was me taking a stand saying that I saw something in myself.
Come on.
Okay.
I knew that as long as I stayed clean, it was going to be all right. And I had to step out on some faith because I had a choice to make again. Loyal to the job or loyal to me. And anything that gets in my recovery has got to go. It's got to go. Because if I get fucking high, I'm going to lose all that shit anyway.
Yeah.
And I've come too far to only come this far.
Yeah, you have.
So without a real plan in place, but with some savings in the bank, I quit. But I gave a 30-day notice. And I trained my replacement. And in the history of that position and that company, that's the first time that's ever happened.
Come on.
Because I believe that there's a way. Shit. I believe that there's a way to move on without burning bridges today. Right? I don't have to feel bad about doing what's best for me anymore. Because at the end of the day, if I'm not looking out for my best interest, who is? So when I quit that job, I didn't know what I was going to do. And then God got me another job. And now I'm making more money than I was. And I've got a flexible schedule. And I didn't have to take no PTO yesterday because we used an app. And me and my girl was driving down here and I was sending emails and making calls like, getting paid, right?
Yes.
Every day I have a new experience of how I need to put my recovery first. And I'm up for that challenge. So if anybody hasn't told you today, I love you and I believe you. And thank you for letting me share.
Let's go.